All right. Well, I'm glad to see you. We'll be glad for you to be done in 20 minutes and sit down and we won't have to see you anymore. So let's jump right into this. You know, we've been doing a series of, we're not really calling them a sermon series, but we're calling it a talking series. We've been doing a number of talks over the last few weeks about life, God, and other small topics, because it was such a great title by an Eric Metaxas book that we just had to steal that title. So life, God, and other small topics. Now, you know, we're doing this for a couple of reasons. You know, one of which is there's a lot of people asking a lot of questions about God. Questions that there aren't easy answers to a lot of times, or sometimes it's the fact that we don't even realize that there is a good answer for it. Which reminds me of this verse in Proverbs 18. This is one of the reasons we're doing this series. It's from Proverbs 18:17. It says, "The first to state his case seems right until another comes and cross-examines him." Because notice this series, this little series of talks, is all about following the evidence where it leads. Is there a God? Is there a reason to believe that God exists? Is there a reason behind the way we view us, the way we view everything? And that's typically what we're talking about here. This other verse why we're doing this is Proverbs 4:23, which says this. It says, "Guard your heart above all else, for it is the source of life." We want you to be able to guard your heart. We want you to be able to answer these tough questions. We want you to be able to look at these things and be able to go, yeah, it does make sense. So we've been talking about all that. And so we're going to continue on this week, but, you know, last week we talked about how there's a lot of design that we see in this world all around us. And we're going to continue on with that a little bit today. But before we do, we're going to share some memes. So here's our memes from this week. All right. So, you guys love this part of the service. So we've kept it up. We're continuing to go on because there's some memes I forgot to use last week that I'm going to use this week. You know, this first one is simply this. I love this one. It says, "Looters have it easy today. It was a lot harder to run with the color TV in 1968. Remember those big, heavy console TVs? We had one until about, man, 20 years ago, and that thing had to weigh about 150,000 pounds. I swear, it was a lot. So, I love this one right here too, because if you've watched any ESPN, you've seen some kind of unusual sports going on and things like that. So here's a meme about that. It says, "With so many sporting events canceled, they're going to televise the World Origami Championship. It's on pay-per-view." Yeah, oh, pun. We needed to save that one for Father's Day. That's a Father's Day pun right there. Pay-per-view. Like, pay-per-view, pay-per-view. You get it? Donnie's going, I get it. All right. Now, for those of you that want to keep your space, those of you that do not want anybody coming within 6 feet of you, or 10 feet of you, or 15 feet of you, we have a solution for you. It's this right here. My social distance service animal. That's pretty good, isn't it? Yeah. I wish we could do that just for the fun of it. I just want a skunk on a leash just to carry around, just to create conversation. And they'd be like, "Why are you doing that?" And I'm like, "So I could tell you about Jesus. Now that you're here, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the way God designed our creation." Now, this last meme I want to introduce, this isn't a meme. This is a real life thing. And it's a pretty amazing thing that is awesome. It's a group of pictures by a guy named Dale Irby. Dale Irby was a teacher, I believe, over in the Dallas area. He was a elementary school coach. All right, we've got some teachers, we've got some principals and some administrators in here. He started coaching. His first year coaching in the school district was 1973. He was a PE coach. PE coaches, they show up in those little, especially in the 70s, right? You know, they'd have those little short shorts and, you know, have the whistle hanging. They don't have a whole lot of nice clothes. Some of you teachers, you show up and you're wearing nice clothes. PE teachers didn't have that. So 1973, his first year of teaching, he gets told, "Tomorrow is pictures. You need to wear something nice." That was the quote, "Wear something nice for your school photos." So he went into his closet and he chose from everything that he had. Now, the ironic part about all that is, so he wears his nice clothes that he had in 1973. The next year, he still doesn't have any nice clothes because he's still a PE teacher. So he actually ends up wearing the same outfit the second year in a row. So at that point, his wife then challenged him for the next year's pictures. His third year of teaching, his wife says, he was horrified to discover the second year that he had worn the same thing. So his wife encouraged him, "You should wear it again. See if anyone says anything." And after 5 years of wearing the same outfit, he goes, let's keep it going. 40 years. Watch this. Look at this. He wore the exact same outfit for 40 years of school photos. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that awesome? That's pretty incredible. Exact same outfit. He's wearing glasses and everyone, and he's trying to look the exact same for 40 years of school pictures. This guy, Dale Irby, he is my hero, y'all. That is awesome. That is amazing. I'm going to start doing that, wearing the same thing every week and, you know, just wear the same outfit up here every single week, right? I can guarantee you our ministry team that's up here, the worship team, every week they go, what did I wear last week? I need to wear something different. Do they not? Yeah, they're all over there going, yep, that's me. I'm always going, what did I wear? I can't wear the same thing. It's a pretty amazing thing. Now, here's the funny thing. You look at this Dale Irby picture, and half of you are going, that is the coolest thing that I've ever seen. And half of you are going, why in the world would you ever do that? Right? Some of you are flat out asking the question, what would prompt somebody to want to do that? And then the other half of us are going, oh, that's awesome. Right? We're the ones that laugh when someone trips and falls and lands on their face. We make sure they're okay first, and then we laugh about it, right? But it's funny because some of you are flat out looking at that picture and going, why in the world would somebody do that? Because we ask that question a lot, don't we? Why? We ask a lot of why questions. Now, here's the thing. He says, my wife, Kathy, dared him to, and Dale thought it would be funny. And after 5 pictures, you said, it was like, why stop? That's the question he asked himself. Why the same? Pretty answers we get aren't very good answers. That's why Proverbs 18:17 says, the first to state his case seems right until another comes and cross-examines him. So today, we're going to talk about some why questions. Now, why questions are all about philosophy, right? As soon as I said philosophy, how many of you just rolled your eyes and you're like, oh, come on. I don't want to talk about philosophy, right? Or was I the only one that did that, right? Here's the thing. Philosophy can be fun. I mean, it really kind of can. Because philosophy is looking at those answers by things. Now, the fruit salad, right? But don't put that up there yet, please. But the third thing, philosophy would look at it and say, well, then is ketchup a fruit smoothie? Think about it. That is philosophy in action, right? You've got tomatoes a fruit, doesn't belong in a fruit salad, but if it's just fruit and sugar, would ketchup be a fruit smoothie? It even makes itself well into a meme, as Allison keeps trying to put it up there. It even makes itself well into a meme, doesn't it? We've been looking at memes. Even better way to illustrate philosophy. Here's my favorite way to illustrate philosophy, because this is what this is looking at things in a little different perspective. Think about this here for a minute. Oil comes from fossilized remains that are, you know, that are rotting away, and it produces oil, right? That's where oil comes from. So oil comes from fossilized dinosaurs. Plastic is made of oil. So if you think about it, plastic dinosaurs are made from real dinosaurs, y'all. Think about it. If oil comes from fossilized dinosaurs and plastic is made of oil, then plastic dinosaurs are made of real dinosaurs. It even works itself well as a meme. Here you go. I pulled these memes off of the internet, true memes that were kind of out there. But this is an example of philosophy in action. Philosophy that's asking those kind of deep questions. Philosophy that's kind of going, all right, well, we want to understand things. And as humanity, as humans, mankind has been driven by the why question. There are 2 things that we want to know the answers to. We want to find out all the things we can learn about this world that we live in. And we want to know why we exist. Is there a purpose behind life? And people are asking those 2 questions all the time. So we're going to focus on these 2 questions today. And the first one is just simply this. Why is it, we're going to put these on the screen. These are the things we're going to talk about. Why is it that we as humans question our purpose in life? And why is it, and here's the other thing. Why is it that our planet seems perfectly designed for us to get answers about our existence and the cosmos and the universe around us? We're going to be dealing with these 2 issues today. Because the question that has driven us since we were young in our infancy of mankind, we're always in search for answers, are we not? That's why we send submarines to the deepest part of the ocean to try and see what we can find. It's why we send satellites and probes out to the furthest reaches as far as we can go out in space. It's why we spend millions and billions of dollars to build telescopes to look into the skies and build spacecraft so that we can go put boots on the moon, so we can go put boots on Mars, so we can start to answer. But have you ever thought about why we ask those questions? Let me tell you something real quick, that I think that we answer those questions because it's part of who we are. And as we kind of get into this here for a minute, as we talk about how everything was designed, as we talked about last week, I want you to realize that that's not just about stars or galaxies or animals like we saw last week, but especially for us, for humans, for mankind. And because God exists, we were made on purpose for a purpose, which leads us to this question: does our purpose matter? Does purpose matter to us as humans? Let's go ahead, because I want you to see this. It says, when I observed the heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon, the stars, which you set in place, what is a human being that you remember him? You kind of catch this picture? David is the one who wrote Psalm 8, and King David is sitting there, and I think he's been sitting out looking at the night sky, and he goes, man, that is massive, that is huge. And look at me, I am insignificant. What in the world why would God care about me? Is there a purpose behind me? We all ask these questions, don't we? There's a guy named Viktor Frankl. He was a neurologist. He was a psychologist. And Viktor Frankl, he lived a pretty amazing life. He was imprisoned in a Nazi concentration camp during World War II. From the years 1942 through 1945, he lived in four different concentration camps, including Auschwitz, the one where that infamous extermination camp. And Frankl, he experiences all the horrors that life has to offer there, if you think about it. I cannot imagine being a Jewish person living in a concentration camp in World War II when 6 million of them get wiped out in those camps. He sees every horrors of those death camps. He has that emotional despair of watching friends die, of watching family die, of watching millions of innocent people, which I'm not sure he saw millions, but he saw a number of people while he was there in those death camps exterminated simply because of their race. He witnessed firsthand what humanity looks like when it's stripped of every dignity and every freedom that they have, and they're tormented and they're tortured with no relief anywhere in sight. And through that experience, Frankl began to realize that man's ultimate need is to find some sort of purpose in their life. He wrote a book about it called Man's Search for Meaning, and he talked about those that survived the concentration camps like himself. And he said that those who survived it were the ones who could cling to some sort of meaning in their life. Here's a direct quote from him in that book. He says, he who has a why to live for can bear with almost any how. Let me read that again because I read it wrong. He who has a why to live for can bear almost any how. I want you to think about this here for a minute. The most drug addictions that we have, the most suicides that we have, are typically younger people. I want you to think about why that is. Suicide kind of fluctuates, and suicide rates have been growing in so many years. They had gone down, but they're beginning to be on the upswing a little bit more. But I want you to ask this question here for a minute. Why do people commit suicide? Think about it here. Have you ever thought about that question? Every squirrel that I accidentally hit in the car, I will tell people, that was a suicidal squirrel, y'all. He just ran out in front of me. He was done. He didn't want to live anymore. But in reality, I know that squirrel just wasn't paying attention. Or he goes, hey, I can make it, right? You know, I joke about the last words of any good redneck is, hey, y'all, watch this. You know, that's the little squirrels. They're not really suicidal. They're just dumb, right? But I want you to think about this here for a minute. Why is it that people commit suicide and animals don't? And when we don't have purpose, we don't have meaning in our life, we don't see the point in continuing to exist. Truly. That's what happens here. It's pretty amazing when you look at what happened in communist China in the 1950s. They outlawed Christianity. They outlawed the Bible. And what happens is millions of people began to worship in secret. And they spread the word to each other. They're risking imprisonment. They're even risking death. And today the Chinese church is stronger than it's ever been. And it happened in the 1950s when Christianity was outlawed. What happened? When we talk about having meaning, if we think that meaning just comes from the material things that we have, then shouldn't us in the Western nations be the happiest people on earth? Yeah, but what's going on right now? Are we the happiest people on earth? No, we're not. Right? Why? Because it all deals with this idea of if we have meaning, if we have purpose. Instead, we have riots. We have questions without easy answers. And what's happening here is our souls are longing for something merely beyond what we can touch and what we can see. They are searching for meaning. We are desperate for relationships. We're desperate for significance. And if you guys are like me and some other people, it's easy to distract yourself from that for a while. We can distract it. That's why I mentioned drug abuse in the younger generation. They don't know how to answer those questions. What do? They fill it full of drugs. They fill it full of meaningless things. They fill it full of bouncing from relationship to relationship or job to job. But all they find is despair in the midst of all that, right? There's a reason that I think that happens, because if there's no ultimate plan or design, if all we are is highly evolved creatures that came out of the mud, then how in the world could we have any meaning? How in the world could we have any purpose? And the truth is, you can't. You know what one of the most best-selling books of the last 20 years has been? The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren. That book, since it was released 18 years ago, has sold like well over 60 million copies. It's been translated, I've seen anywhere from 85, let's beat the middle ground, let's just say 100 languages. A book called The Purpose-Driven Life has sold 60 million copies and has been translated into about 100 different languages. Think about the significance of that. Why? Because we are people that are searching for purpose. You know why that is? Because you were built to search for purpose. So you always have this tug of war. On one side, you go, it's just evolution, and there is no God, there is no designer. And then on this side, you've got a creator who loves you so much and designed you. And which one are you going to believe? This is the tug of war that our society is struggling with right now. This is the tug of war that some of you in this room are struggling with right now, and some of you watching online. You're struggling with that tug of war. And the truth is that I want you to understand that you ask those questions because you were created in the image of God. I have never once caught my dog that I'm aware of sitting around kind of scratching her chin going, "Why do I exist?" I catch my dog a lot going, "Hey, can I have food? Can I have some food? I'm hungry. Can I have some food? I want some food. Food, food." Wait, she's a basset mix. She loves food, y'all. She doesn't care about anything else but her food dish. That's the thing. She's like, and just eats it up, right? But you and I ask those hard questions. And as much as we try and avoid that, any thinking person will at some point deal with this question. And the reason why is because you were designed to think of that question. So what's the answer here? I want you to think about this here for a minute. If this side is right and there is no God, there is no creator, then what they're trying to say is that your life has meaning. Very, very few atheists will tell you that life has no meaning. What they're going to say is, well, we develop our own meaning. We decide what's meaningful. And what's meaningful isn't, our purpose isn't about anything in particular. It's what you decide it's going to be. But here's the thing I want you to catch from it. What they're saying is that their worldview says that life came from no life. There was no life, and now life has developed. But by the same token, there's no meaning, no purpose, but purpose to it. Designed you intricately and wonderfully and loves you so much and made you for a purpose. And purpose and meaning comes from design. Purpose and meaning can't come from random chance. It just simply can't. It doesn't follow logic. Logic doesn't allow that, right? Like we talked about last week with the Scrabble tiles. If you just throw them out there, there can't be a purpose. There can't be a meaning. But if you want to write a message in Scrabble tiles, there's meaning and there's purpose back behind it. So the fact that we look for meaning in our life is huge. But here's one of the fascinating things here for a minute that I want you to think about. Also want to know everything there is to know about this earth, don't we? Man, how many millions do we spend funding science studies? I don't know the answer to that. It's a lot. It's more than I make in a year, I can tell you that, right? It's millions and billions of dollars every year spent to answer the questions about why. Now, here's the fascinating thing. There's a book that I love called The Privileged Planet. And here's the second question. Let's go ahead and put that up there on the screen. It says, why is it that our planet seems perfectly designed for us to get answers about our existence and the universe and the cosmos and the things that are around us? Y'all, I love this book. I keep lending out copies of this book and I don't ever get them back. So I keep buying copies. I've got a copy floating around somewhere that I don't even remember who I lent it to. I remember the other couple of copies who I lent them to. It's a pretty amazing book. It was written by an astronomer named Guillermo Gonzalez, and he wrote this book in 2004. I don't remember. I'd have to look. He is actually an astronomer at the Iowa State University. Yeah, 2004. He writes this book with a philosopher named Jay Richards, and this actually ends up costing Dr. Gonzalez his tenure at Iowa State University, because what he does is he goes, you know, here's the fascinating thing. There's a whole bunch of things that are required for us to live here on Earth. But what's fascinating about all that is that's also just the perfect conditions for us to be able to ask questions and get answers. You with me on all that? So here's the entire premise of this book. That the entire universe, our Earth, even us, all those types of things, we're designed to ask those questions. But what's fascinating is us, our Earth, our solar system, our universe, all the incredible things that we have are designed for us. Now, I'm going to talk about just a few of these things here today. You guys are kind of zoning out. Do we need a stretch? Are we all right? So here's the thing I want to talk about here for a minute. Because I want us to see a few ways that we see that this design, not just in us living, but it's designed for us to be able to get answers to questions, to find answers to those amazing questions we have about our own existence. And the first thing I want to talk about is just us, humans. Now, there's a lot I could say about our design, a lot I could say about how we are so intricately, wonderfully, incredibly put together by God. We could talk about how complex our eye is. We talked last week about how complex blood clotting is. There's a whole lot we could talk about. I want to talk about one thing with humanity today. That's how tall we are, right? Think about that here for a minute. Now, we're different in heights, right? You know, we'll be everywhere. We probably have someone that's like 5'2 in here all the way up to 6'3 or something. I was too high, lower than 5'2". Sorry. The short girl in here is going, I'm not that tall. But I want you to think about this here for a minute. And I'm not necessarily, so I'm talking about how tall humanity is, people, humankind, right? Think about this here for a minute. Psalm 8:3-4 talks about, I want to remind us of that, that talks about, you know, what is humans that you remember me? When David says, I see all these stars, I see all this incredible thing, and we tend to go, we're pretty insignificant. But the truth is, we're really not. When it comes down to our size, we're near the upper end of the animal scale, really, truly. There's a whole lot of microscopic life and a whole lot of animal life. There are very few animals that are bigger than us compared to animals that are smaller than us. When you get down to all life, we're pretty much on that high end. Is that significant? Absolutely. Animals that are bigger than us tend to be less dexterous. They can't do things with their hands. They don't have the ability to create things with their hands. Is that important? And fire is such an essential part in our development. Could you imagine if we were bigger and couldn't hold fire well, or if we were smaller? Actually, you know, it's just all these incredible things. If we are bigger, you're less dexterous, but you don't really get any significantly improved vision by being bigger either. So there's not a whole lot of advantage to being bigger. But if we were smaller, let's say like the size of an ant, we wouldn't be able to control fire, which was essential to our development. We wouldn't be able to do things like that. Now, not only that, but think about how all the answers we get about our existence from looking at the stars and the sky and telescopes. You know how big of a telescope an ant could make? It'd be limited to about half a millimeter, right? Can you imagine looking? We build these in giant, massive telescopes. Can you imagine the cosmos? It couldn't happen. I could talk a long time about all that. But even just our size says something about us. But what about this? This planet we're on, Earth, is that a big deal? Absolutely, right? What can we learn about what we can learn about our planet? I want you to think about that. How many of you, when you were a kid, learned about tree rings, right? We all learned about that. You can know how old a tree is by counting the tree rings in there. We all learned that as a kid. Do you know that tree rings do so much more than just tell you how old a tree is? It records history about the environment that they were in. The width of that, of those rings can tell you about temperature changes and precipitation changes, all that kind of thing. But that's just one ways that we know about our Earth and our past history. And it's not a very efficient one. There are a whole lot more efficient ways to learn about the history of our planet. And we're those people, we're wired to ask questions about our planet. And yet we have the ability to search and find so many incredible things about our planet. One of those better data loggers, if you want to call it that, is our polar ice caps, North Pole, South Pole, those incredible things. There's a pretty incredible thing in Antarctica, Vostok Station. That's what I was trying to think. I couldn't think of the word station, y'all. The Vostok Station is drilled down in Antarctica. 2012 is when they got the furthest down they've ever been. 2.34 miles, and it's just solid ice, and they take cores and they kind of sample that. You know what they have learned about our history from going down 2.34 miles? Do you want to guess how many years of history they've been able to look at? 420,000 years of history by drilling down 2.34 miles into this ice core in Antarctica. So what happens here is you learn about the temperature and humidity over those 420,000 years. But you've even learned, you would kind of go, okay, that would be good for just a one-time thing to be able to learn just what life's like there in Antarctica. But you want to know what's fascinating about that? You're not only learning because there's wind-blown dust that's come from elsewhere that gets trapped in that core. There's sea salt. You can actually discover when volcanic eruptions happened over those 420,000 years because the volcanic dust that would settle down in Antarctica. Y'all, I was 600 miles away when Mount St. Helens erupted, and we got a foot and a half of ash. Think about that here for a minute. Now you have these ice cores that's gonna freeze inside that, and you have 420,000 years of history to be able to look at. Not just about volcanic eruptions and not just about temperature changes, but they've been able to learn about carbon dioxide and the methane levels that have changed over time as the ice volume has changed and as the temperature has changed. We've even been able to discover changes in our own magnetic field by looking at these ice caps in Antarctica. Isn't that fascinating? Now, I'm sure we're all familiar with, you know, what happened 40,000 years ago when our magnetic field changed and it weakened a little bit for temporarily. Yeah, you know what it does? Those Antarctic ice caps. Through looking at those, we're able to see changes that just boggle our mind. Do you know that in those ice caps as well, you're able to see changes in the sunspot cycle that our sun has? Think about this here for a minute. Our sun, you've seen sunspots, those little dark spots. There's an 11-year cycle that our sun goes through with sunspots. In our ice caps, because of the cosmic rays that bombard our ice caps, that is actually recording information in the ice caps, We can tell you 420,000 years of history how strong the sun cycle was based on the cosmic radiation that hit those ice caps. Pretty unbelievable if you think about it. Yet why are we able to get all these answers? It's almost like it was designed for us to get answers about those things, right? Not just even our ice caps. Let's talk about our solar system here. I'm wearing solar system socks today. I've got little planets on there. And yeah, Mark, are you wearing funky socks today? That's right. I've got planets on there. I've got a little solar system, you know. It was totally unintentional to wear that. And it wasn't until singing the song this morning, I'm like, oh, I have on planet socks and solar system socks. It's so perfect. It works in this sermon. So, you know, do you want me to take my socks off and I can hold it up to the camera and we can pass it around? You want to look at my, okay. Our own solar system is so intricately tuned, it's pretty amazing. Let's talk just for a minute about our moon. And I've talked about this in a past sermon, so I'm not going to take a lot of time to talk about it. But our moon is essential in determining our tilt. The Earth has a tilt, and that's a huge deal. The Earth doesn't sit straight up and down. It sits like this, and it rotates like this. That's a huge deal. And we're comparing that to the sun, using the sun as a reference point. That's a huge deal, and we actually have a little bit of a wobble. That's determined by the moon. Without that, life would be a whole lot harder to have here on Earth. The moon actually stabilizes our tides as well. Without the moon, our tides would get wonky and they would get all messed up. And what's funny is we just have the perfect size moon to do all this. Our moon is actually pretty large compared to the size of the Earth. And it's just the perfect size to do all this compared to the size of the Earth. Now, here's the fascinating part about all this, because what happens here is our moon is just the perfect size, and it's just the perfect size to block the sun as well, too. Do you know that our sun and our moon and the sky are the exact same size, roughly? Exact same size. Is that significant? Yes, it is. Do you want to know why that's significant? Because we can have total solar eclipses. The moon will get right in front of the sun and block it out totally. It blocks out the main part, but you're still able to see the colorful chromosphere, which is a huge deal. And our moon is perfectly situated so that we can see total solar eclipses. Einstein's general theory of relativity was proved through solar eclipses. Think about that here for a minute. Without solar eclipses, we wouldn't even know if Einstein's theory of general relativity even held any water. He proposes this back in 1910. We know about that because our moon just happens to be the same size as the sun up in the sky. The sun is 400 times larger than the moon. The sun is also 400 times further away than the moon from Earth, which is why they're the same size in the sky. The truth is, we could actually have And I think I've skipped forward here in my notes because I'm not seeing all this. Maybe I didn't write all this down in my notes. But here's the thing that I want you to catch from it. We could have a larger moon. If we had a larger moon that would still do the tides and our wobble and plate tectonics and all that other kind of stuff, the moon would have to be further away. But it could be larger. But if the moon was further away, if it was closer to it, it's going to mess us up, and we kind of can't do all that. Now, like it's that we live in. Is that significant? Is it? Yeah. You know why? It looks like it was designed perfectly that way. Picture our. We're aware of 214. You know how many of them have that perfect ratio? One, right here. Our Earth and Moon and Sun system is the only spot in our entire solar system. Out of the 214 moons in our solar system, only one matches up perfectly like that. Coincidence? No. Not hardly. It's almost like it was put there in order for us to be able to get answers to questions that we have. We could go on. We could talk about like our universe and our solar system and our galaxy, the Milky Way. You know, the Milky Way is a spiral galaxy, and that's kind of a huge deal because it's actually the best type of galaxy for observation and discovery. And when you deal with a Milky Way, it's one of those spiral galaxies. So it's kind of like a circle with little offshoots coming around. You know what I'm talking about? A little type of thing. We're right between a couple of those offshoots, right between a couple of those arms inside the Milky Way galaxy. Is that significant? Absolutely. Because now we're able to see more stars in the sky. If you've ever been out in a really dark place, and look, you could tell right where the Milky Way, where one of those arms are, because you see it in the sky, right? And look up at the stars and go to a dark place and look at the stars. We could see that because we're right in the middle of a couple of those arms. If we were smack dab in the middle of one of those arms, there'd be so many stars we'd see in the sky, we wouldn't be able to learn anything because it would be too bright. It would be too dark. What's fascinating about our Milky Way is it's just the right age as well to provide the metal content we need for living. It's actually called a, quote, late-type metal-rich spiral galaxy with orderly orbits, which makes it essential to mankind's habitability on Earth. It's just the perfect galaxy with a perfect solar system that gives us the ability to live life. And it just so happens that we are able to get answers to questions we have about that universe. Is that pretty amazing? We want to talk about how we learn about all of that, how we can learn about the Milky Way, how we can learn about our solar system. It's because we can go outside at night and look at the stars, right? You know what you're looking through when you're looking at the stars? You're looking through our atmosphere. And there's a couple of finely tuned criteria that creates an atmosphere, but our atmosphere is unique because it's the best visibility from the planet while not removing many of our protections. We could survive with a thicker atmosphere, but our atmosphere would be so thick you couldn't see the stars. But if our atmosphere was thinner, it wouldn't burn up the meteors and the comets and all that other kind of stuff that we. So this atmosphere is a good example on how it's just so perfectly tuned, not just for us to live, but perfectly tuned for us to be able to get answers to questions that we have. Is that coincidence? Nope, it's not. Our atmosphere, coupled with our dark nights, that transparent atmosphere allows us to look at the stars while giving us the needed, without being able to hold in those needed amounts of nitrogen and oxygen and carbon dioxide and water vapor. But it's just the right thickness to be able to stop those planetary threats like meteors and comets. Incidentally, this doesn't even take into fact we have Jupiter and we have Saturn that act like these massive black holes that suck in all of those things that help protect us. Incidentally, our atmosphere, you know, you're always hearing about the latest planet-killing meteor that's going to come within 3 stories all the time. You know what's amazing about that? We can see that because our atmosphere is just the right thickness to be able to track things like that. Coincidence? No. It's really not. It's designed. It's designed for us to ask those questions, and we have those questions, we get those answers. We have, for life to exist here on Earth, in our solar system, in this moon-Earth system, you've got the hydrological cycle, plate tectonics, oscillating magnetic field, our continents, our stable orbit around a stable star, our transparent atmosphere. All of this cannot be duplicated anywhere in the known universe so far that we know of. Is that coincidence? No, it's really not. So I want you to catch a couple things today. The very fact that you ask the question, what is your purpose, happens because you were made in the image of God. And God just so happened to put you on a perfect place where you get to find answers that you couldn't anywhere else in this known universe. Questions about what the sun's made of, questions about our galaxy, questions about the stars, questions about our own ocean and our own existence. All of this is so finely tuned, not just for us to live on, but for us to be able to get answers to those questions. Does that sound coincidental? Too coincidental to be true. It's design. It's purpose. When it comes down to it, God has a purpose for you. And that purpose, we ask what that is because we are made in the image of God. And every living molecule, every atom around us is just screaming out to the testimony of that. I love what Jeremiah 1, verses 4 and 5 says. It says this, "The word of the Lord came to me. I chose you before I formed you in the womb. I set you apart before you were born." Now I want you to picture what God says to Jeremiah. He goes, before you were born, you had purpose. Before you were born, there was a reason for you. Psalm 147, verse 4 says that God tracks every star in the sky. He's even named every star. All 70 sextillion of them. God knows every single one of them. He knows the name of every single one of them. In the words of Louis Giglio, it's not likely that he's forgotten your name when he's tracking all of that. The God who created all of this, the God that created you, the God that knows you better than you even know yourself, is thinking about you today. You. Yes, you. Sitting right there in your seat. Some of you are going, wait, there's someone in my seat. You can't be talking about me. Yes, I'm talking about you. The God that created all of that loves you, and he wants a relationship with you. When it comes down to it, today boils down to this right here. The life has a real purpose and meaning, especially your life. Life has a real purpose. There's a real meaning behind it. It's not just random. There's a reason we were made to ask those questions, and there's a reason that we're able to search for those answers. It's too coincidental to just be random, to just be luck of the draw. No one's that lucky. No, there's a God who designed us that way, and a God who designed this incredible place that we call home, designed for us to be able to ask and find answers to those questions. Maybe you need to ask yourself, is that too coincidental to be true? Because some of us want to hang on to that. We want to go, man, God doesn't exist. God didn't do all that. Now you've got to answer the question, how did all that happen? Did we just get really, 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 really lucky? No. It's designed and created with purpose and a reason in mind, including you. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you that you love us so much, that you've designed us with purpose, that you've designed us with a reason in mind, that you knit us in our mother's womb. Fearfully and wonderfully, you intricately built us and made us, and you love us so much. Whether it's knowing the number of hairs that are on our head to knowing the thoughts and the struggles and the fears that we have, you're just waiting right there for us to come to you and have a relationship with you. Thank you for this incredible life that you have given us. Thank you that you have built into us your image, the image that causes us to ask these types of questions. No other animal asks these questions because we're not just an animal. We're set apart and we're different because of the image of God that's inside of us. So we pray that we'll do our part this week. We'll ask the hard questions and we'll look for the hard answers. And when we do that, we'll always come back to the fact that you created us, that you designed us, and you love us so much. Thank you for sending your son to die on a cross for us. Thank you for giving us purpose and meaning when sometimes that's hard to find in this life. For your name we pray. Amen.